This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
They said they are going to begin campaigning irrespective of the ban that the INEC has imposed on them. They said it is illegal.
That's VOA reporter Peter Cloti in Lagos briefing us on the delayed national election in Nigeria. Details next. On February 24th also, Senegalese go to the polls to elect a president. Their neighbors in the Gambia are paying attention as incumbent Macky Sall seeks a second term. And Zimbabwe court today found one of the leaders of the main opposition coalition, Tendai Biti, guilty of inciting post-election violence. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the surprise decision in Nigeria to delay national elections over the weekend, hours before polls were due to open, has internal as well as international ramifications. I talked to our reporter, Peter Cloti, in Lagos. I started out by asking him to brief us on the latest development about the meeting the Independent National Electoral Commission had on the matter.
Well, Yehias, the Independent National Electoral Commission is meeting currently to review its procedures to determine whether to officially allow participating political parties to resume campaigning before this Saturday's rescheduled elections. Remember, 24 hours before the regularly scheduled February 16 elections, official campaigning ended. But INEC decided it will not allow political parties to campaign again this week. So that is why they are meeting today.
The two main groups, like you mentioned, the ruling All Progressive Congress and the People's Democratic Party, have both condemned the move and accused each other of trying to manipulate the vote. So how have the political parties reacted so far?
Well, they said they are going to begin campaigning irrespective of the ban that the INEC has imposed on them. They said it is illegal and it has no basis in law as a matter of fact. And to add to it quickly, the INEC came out to say that to ensure the integrity of the rescheduled presidential and parliamentary elections is retrieving sensitive materials it already distributed in parts of the country to ensure the integrity of the election. So that is what INEC is doing currently.
And the bottom line, Peter, is the voters. How are the voters reacting as far as you can tell?
Well, some of them are mad. They are displeased and frustrated. I went into the streets of Lagos just to get a reaction following the postponement of the elections. They were particularly upset that a few hours, at least 6 hours to the elections, the INEC decided to postpone the elections. And they said that INEC should have known that things were not going right. Despite assurances by Professor Mahmoud Yakubu, the chairman of INEC, reassuring Nigerians that nothing, absolutely nothing, was going to force the Electoral Commission to postpone the election. But then hours, just a few hours before the election polls were supposed to be opened for Nigerians to vote, he announced on national TV that logistical challenges has forced INEC to postpone the election for 1 week.
And the international ramifications, Peter, the U.S. and the British embassies, for instance, in Nigeria, released statements expressing concern over delay. Anything on that front?
Well, indeed, INEC has said repeatedly while trying to explain its action that it did everything in its power to ensure the process went ahead, but it was simply circumstances beyond their control which led to this unfortunate incident. But they reassured Nigerians that one of the reasons why they postponed the election was to ensure that the credibility of the election, the transparency, the freeness, the free, transparent election should not be compromised. And they felt that that was the best way to do than to postpone the election. If they didn't do that, they were sure that the credibility of the elections will be undermined by the circumstances that were beyond their control.
And lastly, Peter, the Naira weakened on the forward market today, and Nigerian stocks reports say fell to a one-week low. Anything on that front?
Well, they are blaming everything on INEC, particularly the ruling All Progressive Congress. The chairman, Adam Oshiomhole, said he was disgusted with the explanation of INEC, which led to the postponement of the election, which invariably led to the economic impact, the lack of election last week is affecting the economy. And they are insisting that they demand explanation from INEC. In fact, President Buhari also added his voice and said that Nigerians should not be taken for granted as a result of the incompetence of INEC to postpone the anticipated election a few hours to when polls were supposed to be delayed. He said after the election, people would have to be held accountable. And those who were responsible for the postponing election, they have to be dealt with. That there has to be an investigation to find out whose fault is it that led to the postponement of the election. So these are some of the happenings here in the country.
That was VOA's Peter Cloti in Lagos on the latest in the delayed Nigeria national election. In Cameroon, many Boko Haram fighters have surrendered in recent months, but Cameroon lacks facilities to rehabilitate them. Moki Edwin Kinzaka reports from Mora in Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria.
These are soldiers of the multinational joint task force fighting the Boko Haram insurgency, singing at their base in Mora on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria as they train for eventual operations against the terrorist group. At the same time, there are 87 Boko Haram fighters in custody. The fighters were captured a year ago when they decided to lay down their weapons and be pardoned and rehabilitated as the government of Cameroon had promised. Governor Mijiyawa Bakari of Cameroon's far north region says the former fighters will remain at the base until a rehabilitation center is constructed for them.
Site 13 hectares avait été choisi. La procédure d'obtention du titre foncier en cours.
He says they have acquired a 13-hectare land and are waiting for the central government in Yaoundé to provide funds so that they can develop it. He says Boko Haram fighters that are still reluctant to come out of the bushes of fear that they may be arrested by the Cameroon military and detained should have confidence in the government. He says anyone who comes back will be socially and economically reintegrated and treated as Cameroonians who were simply deceived but have realized that they were wrong and are returning to develop their country. In December, Cameroon created a committee to disarm and reintegrate separatist fighters in the English-speaking regions and Boko Haram terrorists who put down their weapons. The centers for the separatists have been created in the towns of Bamenda and Boya. The centers for ex-Boko Haram fighters are yet to be built. That may be why some former Boko Haram fighters are bypassing the government program altogether. Johem Kawamza, a 37-year-old former Boko Haram fighter, waters his maize farm here in Mora. He escaped from Nigeria in December 2017 and refused to go to the official rehabilitation center, choosing instead to reunite with his family. He says he did not trust the government's rehabilitation program. He says, unlike some of his peers who are being kept as prisoners in military camps, he has rebuilt his life with the aid of a United Nations and government-backed program that trained him and gave him fertilizers and maize to grow.
Moi, j'ai déjà stocké le maïs. Pour moi, la fin cette année.
He says he and his family will no longer be hungry this year as he has stocked enough maize and granules to keep them going. He says last year he was treated as an outcast until some white humanitarian workers came, trained them, and gave them maize to plant and take care of their families. He says it is his wish to use the knowledge he got from the UN program to empower people who joined or were kidnapped by Boko Haram. Cameroon's government has said it wants to help former fighters like Kawamza but first wants to ensure they have definitely broken with Boko Haram before giving them assistance and training to earn a living. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
On February 24th, Senegalese go to the polls to elect a president. Incumbent Macky Sall is seeking a second term. Three opposition candidates are running against him. As reporter Panderam Bay reports, the Senegalese vote is attracting a lot of interest in neighboring Gambia.
The Gambia and Senegal share borders. The two countries speak virtually the same local dialects. One of the countries is a former French colony, while the other is British. There are over 700,000 Senegalese nationals living in the Gambia, majority of whom are engaged in petty trading, auto mechanic work, and other sectors of national development. Given the proximity of the two countries, Gambians at home and abroad are closely following the Senegalese campaign. One of them is Pa Samba Diaw, a Gambian political activist.
I think anything that happens to Senegal always matters to the Gambia because of our geopolitical relationship. And I believe that every Gambian definitely is interested in the outcome of these elections, especially the close relations between President Macky Sall, who is running, and President Alpha Barrow.
President Sall's administration played a pivotal role in defending the verdict of the Gambian people when former leader Yahya Jammeh refused to concede defeat in the 2016 election. Senegal mobilized world leaders at the United Nations and ECOWAS for an intervention force to compel Jammeh to step down. Diaw notes that a Sall electoral defeat will likely change the political dynamics in the Gambia. Modibo Diagne is a Senegalese broadcaster. He says that while Sall has good prospects for winning the election, there is a desire for change in his country.
The millennial generation is coming up into power. They have different views. They have different ways of handling things. And I think Senegal is going through that turmoil of generational change.
There has been a debate among Gambians as to what would be Gambia's future should President Sall lose. To many Gambians, Barrow had mortgaged Gambia's sovereignty to Senegal, a charge the government denies. Dr. Lamin Conte is a U.S.-based professor of accounting.
Senegal practically dictates our day-to-day operations. Look at the fishing in the country. Gambian youths are sitting there. They can go fish because our territorial waters have been mortgaged to Senegal. The supply of electricity is done by Senegal, and it's a shame that we as a country, after 53 years of independence, and by the way, Monday is going to be 54. We cannot take care of ourselves.
Senegal has strong security presence in the Gambia, particularly in the Fonis, the bad region of Yahya Jammeh. Fonis shares border with the southern province of Casamance. Senegal has signed a security pact with the Barrow administration. For VOA Africa, this is Pan Lirimbay reporting.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. 19 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The surprise decision in Nigeria to delay national elections over the weekend, hours before polls were due to open, has internal as well as international ramifications. Cameroon says it lacks facilities to rehabilitate many Boko Haram fighters who have surrendered in recent months. And on February 24th, Senegalese go to the polls to elect a president. Incumbent Macky Sall is seeking a second term. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A Zimbabwe court today found one of the leaders of the main opposition coalition, Tendai Biti, guilty of inciting post-election violence in August by announcing election results. The court said that violated the law, giving that duty to the Electoral Commission. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has more.
Harare Magistrate Gloria Takundwa gave Tendai Biti a 6-month jail sentence, but suspended it on condition that he does not commit a similar offence in the next 5 years. The former finance minister was given an additional 1-week sentence that was suspended on condition that he pays a $200 fine. Speaking upon his release at the courts today, Biti said he was thankful.
First, I want to thank the lawyers for a wonderful job, well done. I also want to thank my president who is here with me. I think he's been praying a lot and there's been a hand of God in the things that happened today.
Biti had been charged with violating the law by saying the opposition had won the July 30th election, which the government says sparked protests that turned deadly. Biti expressed gratitude to his mother and her fellow church members, the people of Zimbabwe and the opposition MDC Alliance, who have kept him in their prayers. Despite gaining his freedom, Biti says his prosecution is very telling.
As for the verdict itself, I'm innocent, absolutely innocent. I'm not a criminal, so we will be appealing against that decision. I'm just a symptom of the bigger challenges affecting our country. Our country has been captured by very dangerous people.
The government is pursuing several leaders of the opposition and civic organizations in the courts on various charges tied to the elections and last month's protests over rising prices. This has been happening despite growing calls for dialogue between the ruling ZANU-PF and the MDC. The MDC leader, Nelson Chamisa, said the crackdown on opposition members does not inspire a genuine dialogue.
We will not allow this kind of persecution on our leadership. That will not move us. If anything, it will actually entrench our commitment in this struggle and will not go back. So yes to dialogue, but dialogue that is credible, dialogue that is not meant just to be a window dressing. We have no time for that.
The latest arrest on an opposition figure happened over the weekend when an MDC youth leader, Denford Ngaizore, was arrested on charges of inciting violence in the January protests. For VOA, this is Kudzai Namashe from Harare.
More than 1,000 Sudanese gathered in Washington over the weekend to take part in the largest demonstration in the U.S. Capitol since major protests began across Sudan in mid-December. They began the protest at the U.S. Capitol building on Saturday and marched several blocks towards the White House. Protesters also called for the removal of Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. Ayan Deng Bior was at the protest Saturday where she spoke to protesters, some as young as 11 years old.
Okay, so we got your parents' permission for you guys to talk. The first thing, what's your name? How old are you?
Mohammed, and I'm 12 years old, actually.
12 years old? What's your name? How old are you?
My name is Ferris, and I'm 11 years old.
Okay, so you have a special message that you want to say. You sound very insistent on making sure that your voice is heard. What do you want to say?
I want to say to all the people that are living right now with homes to go to my country and help my lovely country and all the people that are getting hurt and like getting killed every single day. And I want them to get like the most help out of like everyone here. That's why we're here to help them.
Okay, you're 12 years old. Most 12 years old, they're at home right now playing video games. Why are you here?
I'm here to support my country and not just to play like games and stuff like that. I'm here to support my country and help them.
You want to say something?
What I would like to say is that you should be thankful if you have a home, you're eating, you're living, and that you're not in Sudan right now. I love Sudan. I've been there for about 2 years, actually, but then I came here. But it's just that Sudan, I just want to say, hopefully nothing bad, like super bad happens, but right now it's like super, super bad because okay. Like people are dying.
What's your name again?
Elzalzan.
How old are you?
18. Honestly, it's a really sad feeling because when you think about it, that could be me right now. I could be living there. My schools could be getting bombed. My family could be getting shot. It's really sad and needs to be stopped right now. I want Donald Trump to speak to the Sudanese embassy and try to help them as much as they can, because America preaches about human rights and America wants to help people. So where are they now when the people are getting hurt?
How old are you again, and what's your name?
21, and my name is Zamzam Elzain. All we're asking for is acknowledgement, media exposure, and we're asking for the government to send a letter to the Sudanese people to release all political prisoners.
Yes!
Release all political prisoners, stop the use of tear gas, and stop using violent weapons on these innocent people. They have nothing to fight for but their own hands, but they are dying at the hands of us. We are here representing our country, Sudan, because right now we can be in Sudan living like them, but we are here. The least we can have is a representation of democracy from the American government. That is all. Thank you.
What's your name?
Ikhlas Ahmed.
And then how old are you?
I am 26 years old. This means a lot. This protest has started 2 months ago and is still ongoing because, as Rima said, it's led by the youth in Sudan and in the diaspora, because this is our future. This is, we're fighting for our parents and our grandparents. This is the
land. And your children.
And our children, of course, but for most definitely, we want to go back home one day because this is our home.
I think this revolution is belonging to the youth. This is the revolution of the youth. We've waited for 30 years, and unfortunately, nothing has happened. So this is our future. So we are the ones who are carrying this revolution, and we are the ones who are making it our responsibility, because this is for our children's generation. This is for our generation.
That was Ayan Dieng Bior speaking with members of the Sudanese diaspora who gathered here in Washington on Saturday to draw attention to the plight of protesters in Sudan. Yesterday, a 62-year-old fruit vendor died in Khartoum from inhaling tear gas fired at protesters. The protests began December 19th when the government increased the price of bread threefold. Sudan's government says 31 people have died in protest-related violence, but Human Rights Watch puts the death toll at 51. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
This is Peter Clote of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily report when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.
Hello friends, this is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me this Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Our topic will be African Beauty. This will be Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the results of the February 16th Nigerian presidential and National Assembly elections. What concerns and issues swayed the voters the most? An in-depth discussion on the Nigerian elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.